TV special.
Yes. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
This morning, you've got time for a hot home-cooked breakfast. Delicious and piping hot in only 3 microwave minutes.
Yo, pretty packages of Frosted Delights.
Look, it comes with a toy. I like that. I want a number 4, number 6, and throw in a plastic donut.
Just enjoy the gritty crunch. It tastes just like chicken. Wrappers of many bite sizes.
Man, are you freaking blind? It's a rock.
All mixed in the pot full. Mama's homemade from scratch. Well, not quite. Toasted over flames. They be tasting quite right. All hell King Neptune and his water breathers. No snail thing too quick for his water feeders. Don't waste time with your net. Our net worth is set. Ready, go. Many, no others.
What?
We be the colors of the mad and the wicked. We be bad. We be brick it with the 24-hour sign. Shower mind habits while you dine like rabbits with the crunchy, crunchy carrots.
Oh, that's tricky.
Gotta have it super fast.
Oh, I'm at breakfast. You got time for
super fast, super fast. I come and last. Just in time for breakfast.
And his water breathers. No snail thing too quick for his water feeders. Don't waste time with your net. Our net worth is set. Ready, go. Many, no others.
What?
We be the colors of the mad and the wicked. We be bad. We be brick it with the 24-hour sign. Shower mind habits while you dine like rabbits with the crunchy, crunchy carrots.
Oh, that's tricky.
Gotta have it super fast.
Super fast, super fast. I come in last. But just in time for breakfast. Keep it true, forever blue. Good night, prosectors, luminum, a crucial fun, aluminum. The sea is radioactive, the sea is radioactive.
That's probably my favorite song right now. That's new music from Gorillaz from their new record, Plastic Beach. That's Super Fast Jellyfish featuring the lead singer of Super Furry Animals, Gruff Reese, and De La Soul. The sea is radioactive. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the B-side of episode 171 from Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. It's May 28th, 2010, and we are recording live from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. With so much to go over, that's why we do these extra B-side episodes. Too much to keep track of, and lucky for you, I do the hard work and do the data mining and get it all together and put it in a nice bite-sized form. Don't waste time, like the song says. And what we're going to do for the majority of this 171B is visit all the latest news from my two sister sites, cyberspacewar.com, and first we're going to hit all the latest on foodworldorder.com. First, we want to note, and this is cross-posted on Food World Order and Media Monarchy, I recently had an interview with author and occult researcher Tracy Twyman. Her relatively new podcast is called The Invisible Hand. Our discussion and that's why this is cross-posted on foodworldorder.com, focuses pretty much entirely on the subject of weaponized food, including the fact that rats fed genetically modified food were found to be unable to breed after the third generation, and the fact that, according to the Daily Mail, one in five men is now unable to breed, a problem they say could lead to the rapid extinction of the human race within a few generations. We also talked about aspartame, high fructose corn syrup, water filtration, the doomsday seed vault, the war on organic farming, Newman's own organic fakery, and the genocidal tendencies of the ruling oligarchy. All that and so much more in the recent Media Monarchy interview with Tracy Twyman. It's all linked up, TracyTwyman.com. That's T-W-Y-M-A-N. And again, that follows the theme, because she's from right here in Oregon as well, as we've been talking about in the last several weeks, trying to turn the virtual connections and the virtual friends into real-world meat space friends. And so we've been talking and meeting up with now Tracy Twyman, Andrew Hoffman, Douglas Lane, and more and more. So again, the last I'll say about that is, if you subscribe to the feeds and put it into iTunes or your podcatcher or your feed reader or whatever you use, you won't miss a thing and you won't waste time. This next disgusting story comes by way of the San Francisco Guardian. California throws away enough food to fill 35 stadiums per year. Now, as Cryptagon.com notes, as well as the TechnoFascismBlog.com, keep this story in mind the next year, the next time you hear nonsense from people like Bill Gates insisting we need genetically modified crops to feed the hungry world. Again, from the San Francisco Guardian, vast amounts of food trashed despite incentives. Farmers, restaurants, supermarkets throw away millions of tons of edible food each year at a time when a growing number of Californians struggle to put food on their table. More than 6 million tons of food products are dumped annually, enough to fill the Staples Center in L.A. 35 times over. Food is the largest single source of waste in California, making up 15.5% of the state's waste stream, according to the California Integrated Waste Management Board. And an examination by CaliforniaWatch.org and the Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism at the University of Southern California found shortcomings along California's food distribution chain that allows vast amounts of food to go to waste in landfills despite incentives that encourage food donations. Now, three quick bullet points among the findings. Millions of tons of fruit and vegetables rot in fields and orchards or are plowed over each year. Some of these edible crops are left behind because they are misshapen or discolored. Gleaning programs rescue only a small portion of the field waste. Fresh fruit for rotting vegetables. Point two, major retail grocery chains are more likely to throw away fruits, vegetables, and even entire hams and roasts than donate to distribution centers. While federal and state laws protect grocers from liability, many stores were concerned that donated food could sicken recipients even if it had not reached its expiration date. While some major food chains donate food, others do not. And the last point, restaurants dump tens of thousands of tons of edible food every year. The vast majority of the state's 90,000 restaurants do not participate in food donation programs. Marinate on that, if you will. Our last post on foodworldorder.com this week is a binge and purge for May 27th, BPA and PBR. And we're going to start it off with an article from allgov.com. A can of Del Monte green beans sets toxic BPA record. a federally unregulated industrial chemical considered by consumer advocates to be dangerous to human health, has been found in 90% of canned foods sold in the U.S. A study by the National Work Group for Safe Markets randomly examined 50 cans from 19 states and one province in Canada and discovered virtually all the foods contained bisphenol A, BPA, which has been tied to cancer, reproductive abnormalities, diabetes, birth defects in laboratory animals. One can in particular of Del Monte French-style green beans from a store in Wisconsin had the highest level of BPA ever recorded. 1,140 parts per billion. Other canned foods with unusually high levels of BPA were Walmart's Great Value Green Peas purchased in Kentucky and Healthy Choice Old Fashioned Chicken Noodle Soup bought in Montana. You can get more from the National Work Group for Safe Markets. You can download the PDFs. No silver lining. On down the list of disgusting stories, and again, we find a lot of our stories from just a few sources that do great work covering a broad spectrum, such as foodsafetynews.com. Nescafe Espresso recalled for glass. That's right. The best part of waking up is glass down your throat. Alfalfa sprouts recalled in 18 states. Salmonella sickens 23. The Defense Department apparently has a 26-page brownie recipe. More on that from consumerist.com. It's all about making them stable and last long in travel and transit and wartime. Apparently NPR made them and they ain't that good. Surprise. Another surprise from Food Safety News. Monsanto gets FDA okay for new soybeans. And alert, alert, we could probably spend a lot of time on this. Hipsters, you should know now that PBR, Pabst Blue Ribbon, sold to food kingpin C. Dean Metropoulos. And lastly on Food World Order, importantly, and this is a story we've just touched on briefly, but you can follow the flashbacks and follow the links through Food World Order on Coca-Cola's murderous record of anti-union activity in Colombia exposed. More on that from naturalnews.com, but we also have a clip going along with that, a new documentary discussing just this, and it's called The Coca-Cola Case.
Since 2002, 470 unionists have been assassinated. This year alone, five unionists have already been killed. Unions are disappearing in Colombia.
The world of Quellico is in Colombia, where Coca-Cola bottlers are involved in systematic intimidation, kidnapping, torture, and murder of union leaders in efforts to crush their unions and alcohol.
As a new leader of this company, I came to the Colombia issue with an open mind, and I, independently, have come to the same conclusion as a Colombian court, that the allegations are not true.
The important thing is the free market. You know, I like Coca-Cola.
We had a meeting a couple weeks ago in Washington. Coke called the meeting, and the meeting didn't go well. It was insulting. They said because these plaintiffs are Colombian, we have to give a discount.
And this has revealed serious allegations regarding the involvement of companies, including American ones, in funding illegal armed groups.
Now, of course, we don't have time to get into all the sinister connections between Coke and the Nazis and all of that. But needless to say, all that and so much more is available for you on foodworldorder.com. We're going to move now to cyberspacewar.com for all the latest from the threats to our outer space, to our inner space. First, from Danger Room, word of a soldier's death leaks on Facebook. Everybody's dumping on Facebook right now, and CEO Mark Zuckerberg's non-apology apologies for giving away his customers' personal information aren't exactly helping matters. And of course, we've gone over that he thinks of his early users, at least, as dumb fucks, and that InQtel, the investment arm of the Central Intelligence Agency, gave Facebook a lot of their get-up-and-go capital to do the data mining operation that they are doing as we speak. Continuing. But in the military community, there's an interesting twist on the Facebook as privacy sieve debate. Turns out the names of soldiers dying in Afghanistan are sometimes appearing on Facebook before they're officially released. This ain't a small deal in military circles. U.S. bases in Iraq and Afghanistan go into what's called River City, with access to the outside internet shut down when one of their troops is killed in action. The idea is to give time to notify next of kin before word of the death leaks out. Last Wednesday, however, King's College of London PhD student Daniel Bennett was able to penetrate that veil of silence with a few clicks of the social media search engine Currently.com, that's currently with a K. Bennett found Facebook chatter about the death of 20-year-old Private First Class Billy G. Anderson in Afghanistan's Baghdiz province. The Pentagon didn't announce that Anderson had been killed until 2 days later on Friday the 21st. From what I can tell, this Facebook leak appears to have come from Anderson's parents indirectly. On Tuesday the 19th at 9.09 a.m., Robin McAllister Vance wrote on her Facebook wall, please pray for the family of Billy Anderson. This is the son-in-law of Gina Lewis, who works with me in accounting. They learned yesterday that Billy was killed in Afghanistan. Billy is survived by a young wife and a baby girl. But I'm guessing the news of other battlefield deaths has spread on Facebook even faster before families heard the news. It's not exactly the kind of personal info that the armed forces have begged its troops for years not to disclose. It's exactly the kind of personal info that the armed forces have begged its troops for years not to disclose. It's exactly the kind of material that caused some branches of the military to block access to Web 2.0 sites from their networks for quite a while. Now, the update to that is that the pretty much the family themselves had posted about it and were aware of it. That's the update on the story. So, fortunately, someone didn't have to die, or someone didn't have to find out that their loved one died for a war based on a lie, and I'm sorry. But it is. That's how it is. Let's keep moving on cyberspacewar.com and jump over to the DEF CON 527, the ugly news purge for May 27th. Hacking cough, fever, and runny nodes. First up, unbelievably, and this story spread around quite a bit, I believe, man infects himself with computer virus. And we're just going to grab the quick rundown from TechNewsDaily.com. University of Reading researcher Mark Gasson, has become the first human known to be infected by a computer virus. The virus, infecting a chip implanted in Gasson's hand, passed into a laboratory computer. From there, the infection could have spread into other computer chips found in building access cards. All this was intentional in an experiment to see how simple radio frequency identification RFID chips like those used for tracking animals can host and spread technological diseases. The research shows that as implantable bionic devices such as pacemakers get more sophisticated in the years ahead, their security and the safety of the patients whose lives depend on them will become increasingly important, said Gasson. We should start to think of these devices as miniature computers. And just like everyday computers, they can get sick. They can get sick. And again, this all seems like bizarre sci-fi, but it's rapidly becoming and has become already an enveloped all around us sci non-fi. It's real. Speaking of real and other bloated threataganda, we've been talking for weeks now, at least specifically about Richard Clark, former counterterrorism czar. Your government killed you. He's admitted. It's sourced back to him by way of, I believe, Professor Lawrence Lessig, that in the event And not if, but when there's an I-9/11, they have an I-Patriot Act waiting to shove down our Facebooks. So the latest round, and we've got stuff from CBS4 in Denver, and again, technofascismblog.com, where Clark says that the next terrorist threat will be from those resisting technology. And that's how a lot of this goes. The phony war of terror. If you resist any part of this, if you think the banksters have bought everything up and gave us the crumbs through their multi-generational serial killer families and their roundtable organizations and societies with secrets, if you don't like the war, if you don't like that, if you don't like the body scanners, the spy cams, the biometrics, the RFID, the coming green police, it's against dissent. And that's why all crime is terror, according to the Patriot Act. And they say it's about one thing, to get you to go along with it. And again, they always have a catalyzing, catastrophic event to herd us along, to escalate the agenda. It's all about dissent. So let's take a listen to this CBS4Denver.com report that a cyber war could cripple the nation.
Terrorists can threaten people here in the U.S. by spending a few dollars to create havoc or even building a bomb. There's another threat that's cheap, too. It's called cyber war. Just about anyone with a computer can be an attacker. So we wondered, what is cyber war? That's a good question. Here's CBS4's Alan Janay.
Somebody in a cafe in Baghdad could be attacking us.
Yeah, totally.
But not with raw military power, with this.
I'm getting a timeout message.
And that's what these Air Force Academy cadets are finding out. This is a cyber war exercise.
Yeah, I show you the air real quick.
They're competing with other military academies to see who can best defend against cyber attack.
As they gather more and more information about our network, they're going to start throwing harder and harder attacks against us.
America is vulnerable because we're the most wired, says the Academy's Dr. Dino Schweitzer.
Our society is so dependent on technology in that everything we do, everything you touch, is somehow connected to the Internet. The banking system, financial system, communication system, our medical system.
Those devices we all hold have the potential to turn if they were corrupted, says DU Associate Professor Ramki Thirumella.
All our iPod machines could become zombies or bots and attack the Internet and bring the Internet down.
That means power grids failing, financial institutions tied in knots.
If the whole Internet is down, then all bets are off.
The military could have trouble communicating with satellites and drones, which is why they're learning to defend.
How are the attacks coming at you? How's this working?
First of all, it's really hard to find out where the attacks are coming from.
The Pentagon has its systems probed hundreds of millions of times a year, and three-fourths the cyber attacks come from overseas. China, Russia, even minor countries look to find an opening in millions of lines of code in American software. And the U.S. is in the game, too.
So if we were to attack Iran, for example, we might conduct cyber war at the same time to bring down parts of their infrastructure.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, let's say, for example, that you wanted to attack a nuclear power plant somewhere. If you can somehow disrupt the radar via the cyberspace internet, you can do that ahead of time to protect your warplanes going in.
Some experts still feel the threat may be a bit overplayed, especially since it's very difficult to try to target anyone specifically. But in cyber war, the threat is there as long as the internet is part of our lives.
You feel like a doorstop?
Doorstop for security guard bouncers.
That's your good question. Alan Janay, CBS4 News.
Threatiganda rising. Webster Tarpley has termed it virtual flag terrorism. Like they said, it's hard to tell where it's coming from, and it's hard to direct a retaliatory strike. And that's precisely the thing that we're trying to draw attention to, that if and when some hack attack I-9/11 event happens, they can blame it on the 19 hackers. again, off to the races from a catastrophic catalyzing event. India sees cyber warfare as new-gen security threat. That's from DefenseTalk.com. Second man jailed over Scientology DDoS attacks. That's from The Register. Space is so full of junk that a satellite collision could destroy communications on Earth. That's from The Telegraph. And finally, on this DEFCON 527 hacking call, fever and runny nodes, the shuttle Atlantis has completed its 32nd and final flight. More on that from NPR, and of course, we have to note, always with the numbers. Always with the numbers. Our next story on cyberspacewar.com from Jalopnik.com. IBM wants to control your car, where we note right at the outset that IBM is the solutions company, the final solutions company, with a link to IBMandtheHolocaust.com. A patent application filed by IBM engineers reveals the company's developing technology that will allow governments to shut down the engines of private automobiles via traffic signals. It's like Skynet, only much, much, much worse. Engineers from International Business Machines, suddenly free from the burden of making computers, with the backstory on that from Gizmodo, but we're not getting into that. They're hoping to ruin the driving experience by handing over the ability to stop and start car engines over to traffic lights, railroad crossing gates, and other transportation signals. The goal of the system is to lower fuel usage and optimize the movement of vehicles through intersections by controlling engine operations remotely via traffic signals. A railroad crossing could sense the vehicles in the general vicinity were going to be stuck for a while and would then cut the power to save gas. It's similar to the start-stop systems on a few modern cars, but taken to perverse extremes. We have links in there, and you can, of course, just link up and see the patent application. And again, like I said, more from Gizmodo. But yeah, IBMandtheHolocaust.com, IBM and the Hollereth punch cards. The long and short of it is what helped automate the Holocaust. Our final story on cyberspacewar.com is one we discuss on the most recent episode of The New World Next Week, my weekly video series with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Pentagon Cybercom preps war against the American people. This article from Kurt Nemo. NSA Director Lieutenant General Keith Alexander told the Senate Armed Services Committee in April that he would work to protect the privacy rights of Americans online. It's an interesting comment coming from a guy who heads up an organization responsible for a massive program of illegal dragnet surveillance of domestic communications and communication records of millions of ordinary Americans since at least 2001. NSA is the only place in the U.S. government that has the capabilities we need for defense of the private networks. James A. Lewis, senior fellow and cybersecurity expert at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, he told the CIA's favorite newspaper that last year. That would be the Washington Post. We need to find a way to use those capabilities without putting civil liberties at risk. CSIS, we should note, the aforementioned Center for Strategic and International Studies, is an insider think tank dominated by the likes of Zbigniew Brzezinski, Brent Scowcroft, Henry Kissinger, and other such freedom lovers. Threats against computer networks in the U.S. are grossly exaggerated. Dire reports issued by the Defense Science Board and the CSIS, quote, are usually richer in vivid metaphor with fears of digital Pearl Harbors and cyber Katrinas than in actual foundation, end quote, writes Evgeny Muratsov, a Belarus-born researcher and blogger who writes on the political effects of the Internet. Muratsov notes that much of the data on the supposed cyber threat, quote, are gathered by ultra-secretive government organizations which need to justify their own existence, and cybersecurity companies which derive commercial benefits from popular anxiety. That pretty much lays it out right there on a number of subjects. You could extrapolate that out to all the other topics that we'll cover. Our misleaders pose as our saviors, justify their existence, and the revolving door from administration to the supposed private sector, commercial benefits. Last Friday, May 21st, 2010, Lieutenant General Keith Alexander of the National Security Agency was appointed to head up the newly activated Cyber Command, a subordinate unified command under United States Strategic Command, that's STRATCOM, quote, designed to conduct virtual combat across the world's computer networks, according to The Guardian. The ceremony held at Fort Meade, Maryland, was low-key. As The Guardian noted, and as we note, it was low-key to not draw media attention that the military is going to fight the net like an enemy weapon system. Like they said, like they wrote down in the Information Operations Roadmap. Closing it out, though. Early last week, and we covered this last week on Media Monarchy, the Air Force assigned approximately 30,000 digital troops to the front lines of cyber warfare, a number that represents a third of the troops in Afghanistan. Now, the Air Force Times from the military horse's mouth, airforcetimes.com, wrote on May 19th, quote, the transformation is part of the service's larger emphasis on cyberspace operations and merging most computer system operations and network warfare functions under Space Command's 24th Air Force based at Lackland Air Force Base in Texas. Now, the flashback to only 2 weeks ago, to again help put this a little bit more into perspective for you, from DefenseTalk.com, Pentagon says military response to cyber attack possible. And just as we heard in that clip, you know, just say for, you know, for shits and giggles that we attack Iran, we would also attack their computer systems, right? Oh, yeah, of course. So, reverse engineer that. So, if we said someone attacked our systems, or we're attacking someone's systems, we're going to follow it up with traditional guns and shooting and killing people, like we're so brutally good at. We being the hijacked Western world. And again, this is all prepping us for the coming of, as Webster Tarpley terms it, virtual flag terrorism. Again, so much and more, all on cyberspacewar.com. Let's actually, I forgot, we do have one clip again from the military horse's mouth. This goes back to last summer, pretty much when we started cyberspacewar.com and we started to really see the prep for a cyberspace war.
Now, here's your Pentagon Channel report.
Defense Secretary Robert Gates has established a new military command designed to help the Pentagon deal with the growing threats to its digital and computer networks. U.S. Cyber Command, which will report to U.S. Strategic Command, is expected to begin initial operations in the fall. Pentagon Press Secretary Jeff Morrell.
This is part of a holistic government-wide effort to better organize and situate ourselves to deal with this very real threat, and it is a complement to efforts that are taking place elsewhere within the United States government.
Secretary Gates reportedly plans to recommend Lieutenant General Keith Alexander, currently the director of the National Security Agency, to receive his fourth star and lead the new Cyber Command. Initial indications are the command will be headquartered at Fort Meade, Maryland.
Now, that clip, again, coming from the military horse's mouth, is almost a year old, and you can pretty much hear that everything has fallen out, just as they, you know, probably said might maybe happen. Keith Alexander of the NSA and the military is going to get his fourth star, and they're going to start up something called CyberCom, or at least they're now going to announce that we have CyberCom and announce it to the people after they've already set it all up for the last decade plus. And it'll probably be located at Fort Meade, like it's going to be, where the NSA is. Hopefully, my friends, that will whet your appetite for some of the things that are going on. And again, that's why I felt the need to start up these other sites and these other avenues, because we can see all these attacks coming from all these other different directions. And again, it's all just about taking what activates or aggravates you that you're passionate about and hit the ground running with it. It's easy to do. I ain't the smartest guy in the world, but I can use a lot of free software and free materials. And again, you just gotta want it. You gotta want to be excited about learning and sharing this kind of information. And again, you don't have to be very politically motivated or activated to know that things aren't really going right, are they? Things aren't going right, your belly says. So again, that's all the latest from cyberspacewar.com. The last thing we're going to do on this B-side episode 171 of MediaMonarchy.com is get to a couple of the latest episodes from some of my favorite alternative media. And first up, it's the long-awaited, finally here, latest episode of the Peace Revolution podcast from peacerevolution.org, brought to you from the folks behind tragedyandhope.com. That's Richard Grove and Jan Irvin and all the great folks who make this amazing outlet possible and available. Peace Revolution episode number 5 is called Overstocked: How Naked Short Selling and Counterfeiting Stocks Create Cascading Economic Failures. Starting with the question, what happens when you take a doctor of philosophy who's the CEO of an $800 million company and make him the victim of naked short selling and Wall Street fraud, and put him together with a Wall Street whistleblower who was on the inside selling the so-called compliance software used to hide the evidence of these crimes against humanity? Sit back and hold on, because if you thought discussing Wall Street and finance was boring, you're about to have your mind blown wide open. This is it. This is how the whole scam works from top to bottom. Beginning in 2005, Dr. Patrick Byrne, become known for his campaign against naked short selling, a practice which he says has been used in violation of securities law to hurt the price of his and other companies' stock. Under his direction, Overstock.com has filed 2 lawsuits alleging improper acts by Wall Street firms, a hedge fund, and an independent research firm. The show notes have a lot more information, again, to help flesh out this story and to help you learn how to learn what's going on. Recent episodes from Jan Irvin's Gnostic Media podcast. And again, there's more from deepcapture.com. That's one of the media outlets that Byrne started to talk about what's been going on. So again, huge thanks and congratulations to the folks at peacerevolution.org. And lastly, my man Clyde Lewis from right here in Portland, Oregon. His most recent episode of the new live Sunday night show on KUFO 101.1 FM in Portland, Oregon, blasting out 50,000+ watts all over the Portland metro area and beyond. Ground Zero, Correct Change. With all the talk of change 2 years ago, I think it's time that we ask for correct change. We should start the campaign to ask for correct change. Doing so would actually change the course of history. We're caught in the grip of national paranoia. All the terrorism or rumors of terrorist threats can get people to react in strange ways. Murder, looting, and death wishes will all transpire, and everyone will be in the crosshairs. No one will be above suspicion. If we see ourselves doing the same stupid thing, then maybe we should stop ourselves and try a new plan. Don't let the elites sell you on the idea of your own self-destruction. If you buy into something expecting change, ask for the correct change. That new episode, as well as all the other previous episodes of the new Ground Zero live on KUFO, are available from the fine folks at ZeroPointRadio.com. With their new Z-Pod, you can subscribe and get these episodes, again, in iTunes or in your podcatcher of choice. They're serving out all the latest, greatest groundzeromedia.org, stuff from Clyde Lewis, as well as Media Monarchy Podcast. So again, huge thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com. And I think that's going to do it for this B-Side episode 171. It's May 28th, 2010. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. And one last thing that I will throw out, and again, we'll make more of an announcement, and we'll announce it in the upcoming big episode 172, mere moments away. There will be no live show next Friday. Going on a road trip. Hooked up with some folks from Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington, frolympia.org. And we're going to take a little trip down to Santa Clara, California for Conspiracy Con. Media Monarchy on location at the 10th annual Conspiracy Con in California next weekend. No live show, but I hope to do a lot of hopefully interesting Jimmy on the spot transmissions and communications. So again, more on that on the upcoming episode 172. And that'll do it, my friends. I really, really appreciate you listening. It means a lot. I love that I can sit down, we can spread all this information, it'll come back, it starts dialogue, and that's what it's all about, my friends. Like we always say here, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
I mean, so it's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Same out on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
Yep. This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.